Welcome to the DuPage Vineyard Teaching Channel. Thank you for joining us.
Well, I've had a busy week this week. Nace and I were actually out of town at the Willow Creek Global Leadership Summit. And if you're familiar with them, Willow Creek is a large church a bit north of here. And every year they do this leadership summit. It's 2 days where they bring in some of the world's greatest communicators, experts on leadership, pack out 2 days full of teaching on how to grow as a leader, become a better leader, how to lead effectively, and all that kind of stuff. And it's kind of like taking a sip out of a fire hydrant. We were there actually as exhibitors. I know that we got to hear most of the sessions. But, you know, the theme is always really what makes a good leader and how do you grow. And so, you know, we're talking to leaders and people with a passion for that. You know, my perspective on leadership is if you're a leader, it means you probably have a goal. You're going somewhere. You know, it's not about you're just taking a walk. You've got an idea and you're trying to get there and trying to hopefully help other people get there. So as I was going through this, I just found myself thinking about that and thinking, well, Lord, where are we going? And specifically, obviously, in a church, what does your church look like? And what are you wanting this church to look like, Lord? And kind of just thinking about that and praying about it a little and pondering it. And I had a couple experiences over the course of the last few days that I want to highlight. This is by no means complete as far as God's whole vision for the church, but a couple things I thought I just want to share with you that I think God wants to highlight for us. The first one, actually, does go back to the garage sale, this little yard sale, and you know, people who put in a lot of hours beforehand gathering stuff and clearing out their garage and going through clothes and all that, showing up, being out in the hot sun and, you know, et cetera. But it's a bunch of people who put in a lot of hours to bless some people they don't know, who are taking time out of their life, out of a busy life usually today, in order to extend God's love to some people who were in need. I thought, you know, that really captures, and it's more than, I don't think we're called to be a church of garage sales necessarily, or yard sales, though, you know, I hope we do more. But a healthy church, God's vision of any church is one that is actually reaching out into its world to communicate his love, to extend it. Now, you know, with the yard sale, it's very practical. We're raising money to buy food so people can live. Very practical. But there's a lot of different ways that looks like. It's when you share your faith with your neighbor, you're praying for a friend who's in need, or you're praying for healing for someone who's sick. All of that is different ways of doing it. But underneath it all, there's a heart that shares God's heart for people who don't know him and are in need. Any church that's trying to be a church that looks like God, that looks like Jesus, is going to have his heartbeat, which is for the people who are in need and don't know him. So that was one of the pillars, and I'll come back to that in a second. The other one was actually a conversation I had at the summit with a woman named Gail Haggard. Now, most of you probably, if I say Gail Haggard, you go, okay, I don't know her. So let me give you a little background. Gail Haggard is the wife of a man named Ted Haggard. His name might be a little familiar to more of you. Ted Haggard was the pastor of a 14,000-member church in Colorado Springs called New Life Church. He was known as a spiritual entrepreneur, you know, pioneered different ways of doing small groups, all kinds of different ministries. If you're into Christian music, Desperation Band came out of that church, if you're familiar with them. Author of several books. I have some of them in my bookcase. They're really good. He was the president of the National Association of Evangelicals, kind of an umbrella organization that a whole lot of different you know, churches and denominations are part of. A pretty big deal. He was very well known throughout the country. As the president of the NAE, he actually had a weekly conference call with President Bush or his advisors. You know, he had a lot of influence that way. And back in 2006, in Colorado, where they were located, there was a whole gay marriage initiative, and he was very visible leading the fight against that. And the process, during that time, a male prostitute stepped up and said, actually, he's been spending time with me, and I've supplied him with methamphetamines. And at first, Haggard denied it, and then it came out. He ended up resigning as pastor, resigning from the NAE, and you can imagine the rest of the story. in some ways, I would say that he quickly became radioactive, in that, you know, one, for any Christian, it's bad. If you're that visible a leader of that big a ministry, that much impact, it has all the bigger impact. You know, obviously, scores of people were touched or affected by his fall. A lot of people end up having conversations where you know, everyone who hates Christians or hates the church said, see, here's more proof, you're all hypocrites, and all that stuff. So it became quite a big scandal. So Gail, who I was talking with, is his wife. She also got a lot of criticism for sticking with him. I mean, why didn't she kick him out and abandon him, and et cetera? And she was there because she's actually written a couple books. One was called Why I Stayed, giving her perspective on it. And then recently another one called Courageous Choices that she talks about what were the lessons that they learned. He's actually back in ministry. They started a new church in Colorado Springs. And so, but that gives a little context. I don't know all the details, and I'm sure I'm leaving tons of them out. But I'd seen her picture on the book, and I turned around, there she was, and so I said, hi, and had an interesting conversation. But she described some of her experience, and I'm certainly familiar with, you know, being hurt by the church and the church having its not being all it should be. So I was asking her just about some of her experience, and you know, it was, you know, well, she was very surprised. Some people that who she thought would have stood by them through thick and thin were gone right away. Other people, they were very surprised who came alongside to help and support and pray for them that they never would have guessed. And, you know, you can never predict that. But she also described how for a long time, and still today, I said, so how today, now 7 years after all this happened, how are you received? How do people treat you? And she got one of those kind of smiles that, you know, isn't a full smile, and said, well, there are some people who really, you know, welcome us and seem to care about us. And there are others who would still to this day say, I want nothing to do with you, you know. And I found myself thinking, how do we as a church handle it when people fail? Whether they're leaders or just regular folks like us or whatever, what do we do with people when they sin? When they sin big? When they fail? When they struggle with weakness? How do we posture ourselves as a church? What's God's heart there? And it's interesting then, during the summit, you know, I walk around to the sessions, and I have a gravitational pull anytime I see a table that's got a bunch of books on it. You know, there's something in me that just says, okay, I've got to look. So I'm looking at those and open them. I flip through them and you read a bit here or there. And I happen to pick up one that's talking, the author is talking about his encounter with Ted Haggard. I'm going, okay, well, I didn't plan this. This is interesting. He was a pastor of a church in Colorado Springs at the time this happened. And he was describing his interaction with someone who wasn't a Christian. And they were talking, and then the story comes on the TV, like they were in a local restaurant or something, and the whole story of his fall, and they're talking about it. And the guy looks at the pastor and kind of hits him and says, see, this is why I want anything to do with you Christians. And he starts to respond. He says, look, you know, I get it, it's bad, but you know, not everybody's like that. There's, you know, we're all fall short, but not everybody's like that. And he's going on to explain, you know, we're not all, you know, total hypocrites. And the guy stopped and said, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about your attitude. You guys talk about how you love people and you want people to come in and you'll accept them, welcome them, but look at the way you're treating one of your own. You guys are the only group I know that shoots your own wounded. Why would I ever want to be part of you? The pastor's like, oh, that's, I wasn't thinking of it that way. But that was this guy's perspective, who wasn't part of the church at all, looking at the way the church treated one of its own, who had fallen and screwed up big time, and said, I don't want to be part of a group that treats the hurting and wounded like that. And so between my conversation with Gail, his wife, and reading that passage, it got me thinking, well, what's your heart? What do you want the church to be? Are we going to be, and let me bring it down right here to us locally, because it's easy to talk about the global church. Is the DuPage Vineyard going to be a place where people who screw up big time can find a safe place where they'll be loved and accepted, and people will walk with them to the point of being restored, which I can guarantee you is going to be messy, costly, uncomfortable. And by the way, this pastor, and he took an extra step after that conversation, he called up Ted Haggard, got together with him, and said, you know, I was stunned because I sat down to lunch, and after 2 hours, I realized I kind of like this guy. And started talking to some of his other pastor friends about it, and they all, without exception, said, man, do not hang with him because you will be tarred with that same brush. And basically, if you spend time with him, you will look bad because he's going to be contagious and it's going to affect your ministry. I thought, man, does that sound like something a Pharisee would say? Right? Because in the New Testament, the Scripture, the Bible, if you look at it, the whole idea of sin is if you touch someone who's sinful, you'll become unclean. They're unclean, you touch them, you're unclean. It's not surprising, or it's sad that that's actually kind of the same attitude in the church sometimes. I don't want to touch someone who's unclean because if they have cooties, I'm going to catch them. I don't want cooties. I mean, spiritual cooties, I'm not sure what those even look like, but I know they're bad. So anyways, it's got me thinking, what's God's heart for the church? What kind of church does he call us to be? And I want to just comment on those two things a little more. One is, going back to the garage sale side of it, if you look at the Bible, God seems to go to extremes to reach people. He goes to uncomfortable extremes to reach out to people who are in need and who don't know him. Right? I mean, Romans 5, 8 to 10, some of you are familiar with this verse. Pull out the glasses now. It says, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He goes on in verse 10 and says, for if when we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through his life. And the scripture is like God's reaching out to his enemies. Do you have any enemies? You don't have to raise your hand. And maybe you don't have enemies, but you have some people who really you don't like. Or let's change it, because obviously you like everybody, but there's some people who might not like you. They might not think you are the most awesome person on earth. Is your mindset, I mean, if you were God, your mindset would be, I love this person so much, I'm going to go out. Yeah, I know they use my name as a cuss word all the time, but I love them enough to go die for them. I don't know about you, but me, it's not so much. The people I like are the ones who like me. You know, if you don't like me, then I've got other people around. But that's not God's heart. In Luke 15, he tells the story of the prodigal son. So let me read that real quickly. And in our culture, we don't understand how radical this story is because things have changed. But 2,000 years ago, this was a story that made people go, what? It goes like this. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. Now, that was his inheritance, which you normally get when he's died. That is the equivalent of someone going and saying, Dad, I want your money more than you. Would you please hurry up and die so I could have your estate? Now, I don't know about you. If my son came to me, I would not be filled with warm fuzzies if that's what he said. So. But his father divided his property between the two sons. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he spent everything, there was a famine in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death. I'll set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. It goes on, and you know, the son gives his little speech. And the father says to the servants, quick, go bring the best robe and put it on him, put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet, bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For the son of mine was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. He goes on, there's more of the story about the older brother's reaction. But the idea, anyone listening to that story, when they hear what happens to the son, how he spends it all while living, he's got to, you know, feed the pigs, they would say, serves him right. That's exactly what he deserves, and worse, this is justice. This is right. God is just. This is exactly what that guy depends on. Look, God's given it to him. So then he comes home, and the father sees him and runs to him. At that point, everyone listening is going, what? Because that is not what would happen. In that culture, what happened, the father would just sit back, the son would come and give his speech, and the father would probably just stare at him and say, too late. Or make him pay for it, or something. Because he's insulted his father in the first place by asking for the inheritance, and then by leaving and squandering it, that brought shame on the father. Shame in the community. Everybody would look at him and say, you know, that guy, don't want to be like him. He really screwed up as a father. He's failed. And for the father to go and run, and if you ever tried to run in sandals and a robe, that ain't easy. Okay? The father ran to his son, which means he decided somewhere he didn't care what anybody else thought. He didn't care about his reputation. He had so much love for his son, he said, I don't care about what anybody else thinks or says or will do or how they'll treat me later or how this will affect my reputation. It doesn't matter. I'm going after my son. And the son gives his speech because he's ashamed. And we don't get, I mean, that's a picture of God, of how extreme God is in wanting to find his lost children. God doesn't care what we think or people think about his reputation. He doesn't care. He's going to go to extreme to express his love to the people he loves, which is all of us, and go after that son, go after that daughter if it's a daughter. Go after. That's extreme. But that's the heart of God that we see in the scriptures. You know, and both parts there of that story reflect that. It's a priority for God in the way he uses his time, his energy, his money to reach people who don't know him, to reach those who are hurting in need and communicate his love to them. And if the church is going to be his body, we need to look like that. We need to look like him. Right? The biggest problem is the church always gets into is when we don't look like Jesus, we always get in trouble. And when we do, we always confuse people, but it works better. So what does that look like today? Well, it can look like a garage sale on a Saturday in the hot sun. It can look like you going to work tomorrow or talking to neighbors today and reaching out and taking time to spend time, to actually share your faith, to actually go the extra mile and listen, try and hear their story and say, you know, well, tell me what that was like. Wow, that sounds hard. Sometimes God is putting all kinds of people in our path and we don't realize. And we go into work and we're trying to think of, who would be a good prospect? And we always pick the people who are the best ones, who if you add a little bit of God, they're going to be awesome. And we miss the person who's crying in the corner, who God has set up for someone to come along and communicate his love to. I can guarantee you that this week you will encounter people who are in need of a touch of God's love, who are in need of some encouragement, who are in need of some prayer, who are in need of some listening ear, and taking the time to extend ourselves to say, you know what, tell me about it. You know what, let me pick up the tab for that. Let me, going to, in our case, it often doesn't look like extremes, but taking a step or a couple of steps to say, you know what, let me be like Jesus to you right now. It means taking the initiative. You know, even on a Sunday morning, you know, we're a relatively young church. I had someone come and say, well, I've only been here a few months. I say, you don't understand, that makes you an old-timer here. you know, really? I'm like, yeah, you need to start reaching out to people, and introducing yourself and welcoming them. And they said, but, and you can see the wheels turning, like, and the unspoken question, because they knew if they said it would sound bad, was, aren't they supposed to do that to me? Aren't they supposed to be reaching out to me? It's like, well, yeah. First time you're here. By the time you've been here a few weeks or a few months, now it's changed, and now you're the one who's supposed to say, hey, welcome, so glad you're here. I don't know your name. That's okay, half of us don't know each other's names. But we'll get there. So on the one hand, we're supposed to reflect the heart of God that is reaching out to the people around us. Within the body, certainly, but also outside the body. That's going and saying, you know, how can I minister? How can I show you the love of God? How can I express it? Can I pray for you? Let me tell you what he's done for me. And, you know, the hard part is it's always a little bit scary. It's always risky. You always have to step out and risk identifying yourself as a Christian, and they're going to think you're a religious fanatic, and you're going to think all that. Well, okay. Maybe you get crucified. Well, you're in good company. So I think this church, I think it's true for all churches, but I can only speak to this one. We're supposed to reflect the heart of God who's willing to go to an extreme to reach people with his love and communicate it. The second thing we're supposed to do is be a safe place for the hurting and the struggling. You know, in Mark 2, Jesus gets in trouble. He seemed to get in trouble a lot, right? He is invited. He talks to Matthew, a tax collector, which is the worst kind of sinner. And verse 13, it says, Jesus went out beside the lake, a large crowd, you know, began to follow him. And he saw Levi, also known as Matthew, sitting at the tax collector's table. Follow me, Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed him. And while Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked the disciples, why does he eat with them? On hearing this, Jesus said to them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Jesus said, I came for those who are sick, who are hurting, who are lonely, who are needy, who are struggling, who can't seem to get their lives together, who can't seem to get free from that particular sin, who seem, you know, that's, he said, that's who I came for. So if you responded, by the way, you're in that category. In Matthew 12, you say, you know what? It says, a bruised reed he wouldn't break. You know, someone who's already hurting, who's already bruised by life. Some of you know what that's like. You carry the bruises of life, of an imperfect family and maybe not so great teachers and coaches who were maybe a little over the top and bosses who were jerks and all the rest. You carry some of those bruises on you to this day. And Jesus said, you know, I wouldn't break a bruised reed. I want to be a safe place for those bruised reeds to get healthy, to get restored. He said things in Matthew when Peter came and said, Lord, how many times should we forgive people? Seven? The standard was three. Peter thought he was really being impressive by more than doubling it. And Jesus said, well, no, let's go 70 times seven. In other words, enough that you can't keep track. Enough that it's too much for you to count. And if you're counting at 70 times 7, then you have a whole different issue of problems. You know, 489 times I've forgiven. Only one more and I can get... If that's your mindset, you got a problem. The point was, you just keep doing it. You just keep doing it. That's, he said, that's the kind of peep... That's what I want my people to be marked by. A care for the lonely and the hurting and the wounded. A willingness to forbear and walk with people who are failing, even hurting you over and over and over, and saying, I forgive you. I'm going to let it go. Galatians 6 is an interesting passage. This is one that I talked about with Gail, actually, and she brought up. Okay, we got there already. Brothers, if someone is caught in a sin, you who are spiritual should restore him or her gently. But watch yourself, or you also may be tempted. I'll stop there. You can read the rest faster. If someone's caught in a sin, if someone comes and says, man, I am struggling, I can't get free of this, the goal is restore. And to do it gently. If you've ever talked to someone or you've been in that place, let's put it that way, if you've been in that place where you're stuck and you're struggling, you can't seem to get free, and you take the risk of being vulnerable and telling someone, man, I don't know what to do about this, the last thing you want is someone who's going to be heavy-handed, who's going to say, well, don't be an idiot, just stop doing it. Restore them gently. Come alongside, realizing, man, it's a risk to be honest about what's going on inside. Be gentle, realizing it could be you. And if you're really honest in other areas of life, maybe it is you. Watch yourself. You may be tempted to look down on them and say, well, I don't have that problem. And if you were really serious about God, you wouldn't have that problem either. I know none of you have ever said or thought that. But restore them. Don't leave them alone to figure it out, and hopefully they'll get it sometime. God's heart is the church reflect His heart, that we're a safe place for the wounding and hurted. So those who are bruised come in, they don't get broken. They don't hit this wall of condemnation or judgment. Most of us are very aware of our sins and failures. We don't need someone to come alongside. By the way, did you know that was sin? Yes, thank you, I did. That's not my problem, recognizing that is a sin. My problem is, how do I stop? How do I change? How do I get out of it? Sometimes you're able to do that on your own. Most of the time, we need someone to come alongside and help us, which means it has to be a safe enough place to be honest about it, a safe enough place to ask for help. So what does all that mean for today? Give me two things. I'll flip back to the reaching outside. I'm going to make you schizophrenic. I'm just going to skip back and forth from one side to the other. On the first hand, it means reach out to those around you, even when it's costly for you. You can feel like, man, I don't know what to say. That's okay. They're not looking for your wisdom, they're looking for your care, for your compassion. It's amazing how often you can get the words wrong and have people feel really loved if you're just willing to put yourself out there. They get the right words from a book at Barnes & Noble. Take some time to ask, God, open my eyes, let me see the people right around me, at work, on my block, in my family, who are in need right now. Reach out to the people around you. Just do it. Just say, you know what, I'm going to stop pretending, I'm going to stop with all the arguments, and should I or shouldn't I, is it this person, what do I say? You know, I'm just going to jump in and trust that God will give me something when I get there. It's amazing how often you end up with an amazing God story afterwards. Man, I didn't know what to do, but I decided to jump in, and God helped me. He gave me the right thing to say, and the person responded. I remember having one of those times I jumped in, I was talking to a person, I went away going, I said everything wrong. Right? You know, when you realize afterwards, I said the wrong thing, and the things that weren't wrong, I just screwed up how I said them, and it was like, blah, 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 and the person said, oh, thank you so much, that was helpful. I thought, God, somewhere between blah, 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 and their ear, you really fixed that. Well, I don't know about you, but that's what I'm counting on. You know, I talk to people all the time, and most of the time, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to help. I may have learned a few things over the years, but half the time I'm going, God, that's a big one. That's a hard one, Lord. So you need to help them. And sometimes I get to be part of that. It's the same thing for all of us. Sometimes we get to be part of it, but just jump in and say, well, God loves that person. God knows what they need, and maybe He'll give it to them through me. Let me just take the risk. And being a safe place. You know, whenever I've talked about that with people, I always hear people say, man, that'd be awesome. I would love to be part of a church like that. In other words, I would love it if people would treat me that way. If people would not judge or condemn, they would accept me for who I am, and I could share my struggles, and they would accept me and pray for me and support me and be encouraging. I would love to be part of a group of people like that. Would you? Wouldn't you like to be treated that way? So, do you think there's a trick question coming? There's two of them. The only way that happens is if we decide, you know what, I'm going to be that person who does the accepting. I'm going to be the person who does the listening. I'm going to be the one who loves but doesn't judge, who accepts people and comes alongside and is willing to get messy and you know, get cooties because, oh, I'm talking to this person, everybody else thinks they're an idiot, but so I'm going to look like an idiot, but you know what? I'm going to be their friend anyways. You know, part of it is, are you willing to be that person? And I'm going to give you one thing that's a little bit deeper than that. Are you willing to take the risk to be the vulnerable one? To be the one who says to somebody else, you know what, I'm really struggling with this. I don't know what to do. You know what, I haven't told anybody. I've got this sin in my life. I've kept it a secret for years. And I'm going to bring it out in the open. That's scary. That's taking a huge risk. See, if I did a survey, how many of you find it easier to help somebody else than to ask for help yourself? Honestly. Okay, those of you who didn't raise your hands, I suspect you're lying. In church, to the pastor, you know you're going to hell. But you know what? The cross will even cover that. No, honestly, we do, don't we? We find it so much easier to help someone than to ask for help. Why is that? Because somewhere, and I give credit, I'm stealing this from one of the Leadership Summit talks. This is not my original insight, but I think it's true. Somewhere, you have made a judgment that asking for help is a bad thing. That it reflects bad. If you ask for help, it means that you're somehow not competent enough or capable enough or smart enough. You should be able to do this, or if you really work hard, you can do it. That's why you struggle with asking for help. Which means you have attached a judgment to asking for help. So when someone else asks, no matter how pure your motives are to think, oh, I just really want to help, there's a part of your heart that has a judgment that says, but if you were really sharp, you wouldn't need to ask. And somehow we need to look inside and say, you know, I'm going to let go of that judgment, which means I'm going to be willing to go first to ask for help. I'm going to detach that judgment and say, you know what, I need help too. I'm not Mr. Self-Sufficient. I'm not Miss Perfect who's got it all together. And if I just work hard enough, I'll figure it out. No, you won't. You won't. You haven't. You won't. You know, just to cover my bases, let me, you know, is there anybody in here who's perfect and got it all figured out? Okay. The only one who raised her hand was my sister. And I can tell you, I know better. Which means that all of us at times have been or will be in a position where we need to say, you know what, I need some help. I need you to pray for me. I'm stuck. I'm not sure what to do about this. Would you? I just need to vent. I don't know what to do. See, if we want to be a safe place, part of it is being willing to accept people where they are. Part of it is willing to be that person, to be the person who doesn't have it all together, to be the person with an imperfect marriage or a problem with a temper or a struggle with lust or pornography or kids who we can't figure out what to do with and are afraid they're going over the deep end or marriage that's in trouble. And we need to be willing to be the person who says, you know what, help. And it's amazing that when enough people start saying help, guess what happens? People get helped. And God, who says, a bruised reed I wouldn't break, says, this is my kind of place. I'm going to get right in there in the muck with you. And I'm going to start to elevate things. I'm going to start to bring healing. Because that's the heart of God. A healthy church reaches out to the world because God reaches out and is extreme about it. But when those people come in, they find a safe place. they come into a place it's okay to be imperfect and to fail and to sin. I'm not saying it's okay to sin like, oh, who cares? I'm saying it's okay to say, you know what, that's where I am. Because until you're able to do that, you can't grow into who you should be, who you're called to be, who God's after you to become. Because it's in that venue that the growth happens. Let's have the worship team come on up. We're going to go into worship here in a second. And as they do, I want you to think for a minute, okay, Dave, you threw the stuff at me about reaching out to the world and God's extreme, how God's extreme about that, and about being vulnerable and this being a safe place, and okay, two things already is a lot on the plate for me. What I want you to do is take a minute and say, okay, God, what's my next step? Is it reaching out to people around me? Is it reaching out to ask for help? Is it just learning to be more accepting and willing to embrace people who are hurting? I don't know. What I do know is that you have a next step. The second thing I know is that that is God's heart towards you and I. Wherever you started, God said, I'm going after you. And whether you came to Him because your parents taught you about Him, or someone else when you were an adult shared the gospel with you, somewhere in there, there was a living God who said, I love you and I'm coming after you to draw you into relationship with me. Who's still saying that today. I love you and I want to draw you into a deeper relationship with me. A God who's willing to go to extremes for each one of us in here right now. And we go into worship. You're worshiping a God who says, man, I love you so much, I don't care what anybody else thinks. Think of it this way. God is saying, I don't care what anybody else thinks about you. I want to be associated with you. You don't make me look bad. I love you. And I accept you where you are. I am a safe place for you. I know all your sins and weaknesses and struggles, and I accept you. I embrace you. I'm not going to leave you there. I'm going to grow you because I love you. But you know what? There's no judgment. There's no condemnation for where you are right now. That's the God we worship and the God we serve. And so as we go into worship, I want you to say, I've been saying, what's your next step? And I also want to say, now put that aside for a minute and say, God, I am so glad that you are not like me. I am so glad that you are not like that. You are this amazing God who loves me that way. And just worship Him and honor Him.
This has been a DuPage Vineyard Church production.